current phase in Italy, the commons emerged really pretty much into a within a legal discussion. And the legal discussion was a discussion on how to cope with the tremendous amount of privatization that happened from the early 90s. So as soon as globalization became a sort of social organization at the global level with the fall of the Berlin Wall, Italy followed suit and arrived very quickly to develop neoliberal policy. And this neoliberal policy was basically masterminded by what were called technical governments at the beginning of the 90s. And these technical governments deployed the strategy of challenging the previous order as corrupt in order to substitute it with a technocracy. Okay? That was, you know, first of all determined by judicial action, by a few active, very active judges and magistrates, but you know, later it became some sort of a narrative that the whole previous so-called Prima Repubblica, you know, the previous order, the one that emerged after World War II, was hopelessly corrupt and therefore had to be replaced. Okay, and that was needed in order to modernize Italy, and it was needed in particular in order to make it into the first line of the countries that would merge into the common currency. Okay, so here we are in Europe has already in place or is putting in place the basis of the neoliberal order. The single act was of 86, Maastricht 1991 or 92, I don't remember exactly, but anyway, we are exactly in those years. There are some results that have to be reached in order to prove to the other partners that we were worth to get in business with, ultimately in a final fashion, as we discovered. The Greece experience, right? That there is no way out of Europe. And so in order to get in, we had to do certain kind of policies, and among those policies there was a very, very massive privatization of public goods. From banks to insurance companies to factories of a variety of kind, telecommunications, you name it. There were privatization of assets belonging to the public for an estimated 130 billion euros in about 3 years, which was an extremely intense and strong privatization effort. Apparently was even stronger and more intense than the one of Margaret Thatcher in England. It was a very, very dramatic thing. And that was accompanied by a very sustained discourse, both academic and in the media, about the fact that that modernization required to enlarge the private sector, to you know, transform companies into public companies in the American sense, to go into the stock market, those kind of things. For 10 years, there was practically no possibility to discuss this. I remember that I was one of the people that started to have some issues about privatizations. Pretty early on, but you couldn't really articulate them in the academic debate. They would not invite you anymore. There was some sort of a very strong ideology of neoliberalism that was not yet understood as such, but that was very, very pervasive. Beginning in the early 2000s, the Ministry of Economy in Italy, at the time there was you know, we had this alternative with center-right and center-left that never made a really difference. You know, they were governments that were pretty much doing the same kind of policy in economic terms. They never changed really the people in place. So I don't even remember who was the minister. Mm-hmm. But there was a decision to actually account for all, to have some sort of a catalog of all the goods that belong to the public. Okay. The narrative was Italy is an extremely rich country. We have a huge amount of public of public resources, but we don't run them properly. We are very inefficient. We are like you know, some sort of a nobleman with a lot of property that doesn't do nothing. We have all those paintings into the cellars of the museums. We have all these jewels here and there. We have all these buildings, all this stuff that would actually yield a lot of money. and we waste it. Okay, and therefore we need to know what we have. Apparently there was no general catalog of public goods, and so they decided to do that. And the guy who was actually in charge to do that ended up was by mere chance was a friend of mine, Eduardo Reviglio, who got from the Ministry of the Economy, where he was at the time as an economist, the duty to actually try to work out this catalog and to evaluate these commons, this public property, according to market standards. Okay, so the idea was, okay, let's see what we have, you know, and let's see how much they are worth by some kind of estimates. We need to know that. I got immediately suspect, you know, because we started talking all the time. It sounds very, very bad to me, because I said, you know, the typical way to plunder something is to know what it is, right? and so it was pretty clear that this effort of knowing was, in fact, you know, a prerequisite of actually then trying to sell them. You know, you have to understand that all those privatizations were not really sells in the way in which a lawyer would see selling some object. You know, they were basically financial instruments. Okay, so you privatize by creating special purpose vehicles. You put these assets into a special purpose vehicle. The special purpose vehicle then, you know, get money from the banks and anticipates the money to the government, and then with an obligation to sell them after. So it's a very financial operation. It's not like you say, okay, I have five buildings, difficult to sell them, I have to wait until someone buys them, okay? There were all these vulture funds, all these big banks that arrived there and offered these kind of solutions that for the government were good, because it looks like you are kind of rationalizing. And of course, Greece again knows very well on these stories, right? It was pretty much a common pattern. So this guy came out with that. I said, look, this is really looks bad, and we started talking about that. And then 2 years later, 2003, I got a I got a research appointment at Accademia dei Lincei, which is an institution in Rome, a research institution. And at the time I was basically thinking what about what to do. You had a lot of time and you had just to propose a research project, and they thought that the critical evaluation of privatizations, you know, more than 10 years after, would have been a good thing to do. Okay. And in fact, you know, we started looking with this friend of mine, looking into the papers and what happened to this privatization, and there was a very similar pattern all the time. Whenever you privatize something, what would happen was that basically the compensation packages of the managers would increase a lot, okay? The number of employees would decrease. The budget for advertising would increase a lot, which was even the most suspicious thing, you know? Why companies that are generally in monopoly conditions have to put all this money in advertising? You know, these were public companies that became private, but they remained, in fact, you know, with telecommunication, water, things like that. Why they should advertise so much? And the solution was that, in fact, you know, the budget for advertising was really the way in order to capture the political system. Because if you have a lot of money for advertising, then you can give some of this money to the newspapers or to the radio or to the television, and then the radio, the television, and newspaper would interview the politicians that you tell them to interview, and those politicians would become, you know, your cronies. And so you'd have some sort of access and control of the political process that was very useful, especially if you kind of work on those kind of regulated or highly regulated market, like banks, insurance, water, and so on and so forth. To get, you know, friendly regulation and to get purse of a variety of ways. So all this data came out comparatively. You know, we had some scholars from Milano working on Germany, we had some working on England, some on France, because, you know, this privatization happened in a lot of places. And eventually we decided to do a conference at the end of our work at the Accademia dei Lincei. By the time it was 2005. And many, many lawyers came. We invited a lot of lawyers, and there was this very interesting discussion. And at the end of the discussion, an old guy who was a famous Italian scholar, who was at the time, you know, vice president, I think, of the Accademia dei Lincei, said, "Oh, you know, here there is an issue of we need to actually do some reform of the legal system in order to make the legal system effectively capable to control these processes of this mission of public goods. Because all of that happened without any kind of legal control. You just had the government in office would sign a decree and would sell the stuff, you know, as it was its own stuff. But in fact, those stuff belonged to the people. And so you thought that you needed some sort of control, okay? And so the discussion happened about how do you control the dismissal of public goods. Because as of today, throughout the West, we have no way to control dismissals of public goods. They are in the province of the discretion of governments. The only way to stop that, if you win the elections, you get voted in office and you have the government power, you also have the power to privatize. You can run a campaign on privatization, and you can win the elections, and you privatize. And you could privatize everything. You could privatize, you know, universities, hospitals, and in fact it happens. And you just do that by winning elections, okay? But the truth of the matter is that if you lose elections once and then you privatize what you said you have to privatize, and then the next one who wins election changes his mind, then he's stuck. Because those assets now are in the private domain and are protected by constitutional law. So you cannot republicize once you have privatized, and it's a continuous process of structural transformation of public into private that happens as a one-way direction, okay? Center-right or right-wing or even center-left. Neoliberal governments decide the problem of privatization, they privatize, the next guy that arrives has no way to come back because you've not had the money to buy them back, right? Now they do not belong to the state anymore, they have no money to buy them back, and they cannot exercise the power of expropriation. So this is a very clear legal issue of imbalance, and it was really interesting even to find an explanation of that. And the explanation is into political theory of modernity, right? This idea that the sovereign represents the people, and whatever the sovereign decides is actually in the general interest of the people. And therefore, because people have a chance to elect governments in democracy, then democratically elected governments can do what the hell they want to do with stuff that, however, don't belong to them. Because that's stuff that actually belongs to everybody, was accumulated over long periods of time, and they are just, you know, the government in office for a short period of time should not be entitled to actually sell stuff that were accumulated together by the community in a long period of time. Okay, so there is a clash between the theory of the state as a person, as a legal person, and the theory of the state as a community. Okay, lo Stato comunità, the state community representing the people, as opposed to the state apparatus representing the apparatus. And these two notions are messed up together with the result that basically privatization can occur the way I just said. So how you do that? The only way to stop that would be to have a constitutional reform. And a constitutional reform that actually would introduce guarantees of due process of law, not just for private property, as they are today. You know, private property cannot be taken without due process of law. Just compensation have to be paid. You know, the constitutional guarantees of property law that you find everywhere. Those constitutional guarantees should be extended constitutionally to public property as well, okay? And that would make privatization justiciable, okay? So the government decides to privatize, but then you could second guess what the government does by suing in a court of law or the constitutional court and say, government, please show me the public interest, okay? What is it, why are you privatizing? Is there a public interest of privatization that is of everybody or not, okay? Are you paying compensation what we are doing or not? Okay, what happens to this community that expropriated of its own assets? What happens to the students once they find the year after that the university is private and now costs 5,000 euros a year? Okay, so are those people compensated or not? That would be the only way to actually radically approach this issue, right, with constitutional reform, which doesn't exist in any legal system in the Western world that arise from constitutional democracy. So the model of constitutional democracy, okay, that is basically the legal structure of capitalism, is engineered to allow the power to decide over the property belonging to the people, okay, out of its own interest. Now, that could work and would have been, you know, it was, in fact, a completely sound solution, at least in theory, in the moment in which the government was actually acting in the general interest. But today, the ratio of power between the public and the private, the one I was discussing before, that ratio of power is completely transformed. So the government cannot be assumed to be stronger than the private sector. Actually, there are private sector actors, and a lot of these hybrid institutions, such as the one I said before, you know, the ones that had a very high budget for publicity, so those institutions are actually capable to capture the government in their own interest. And therefore, most of the privatization happened not in the interest of the people, but in the interest of the buyers, okay, of the private people that actually want to buy the property. And those dismissals are routinely at very cheap price, routinely. Okay, when dismissal happens of exceedingly important companies, they are given away for nothing. Sometimes even the government gives money to the buyer just in order to say, I don't want to deal with that anymore. Okay, that's the way it works. So the academic, that will happen in the discussion at Academia di Vinci. Of course, now this is a reconstruction of mine after, you know, 15 years, and so, you know, it might not have been this clear cut, but, you know, these are trends that are then interpreted. Anyway, we get out of there, and we say, well, but we will never be able to do a constitutional reform. And then we started thinking, how are we going to handle that? And one possibility was to try to work not on the constitutional law level, but at the level of the ordinary property law. Okay? So, if we could imagine taxonomies of property and the legal culture that constructs property, public property in particular, in a way that is different from the very weak and obsolete notion of the domaine public and the domaine privé, so the old Napoleonic notion of public property, and we can reform that, maybe, you know, this could be a first barrier, okay, against, you know, this process of privatization without principles. Because then you figure out that certain kind of goods cannot be completely discretionary in the hands of power, but they should actually be, you know, we thought it would have been a good idea to do that. We were able to persuade the government at the time, so center-left was Mr. Prodi in power at the time, so we got able to establish a committee at the Ministry of Justice level that became known as the Commissione Rodotà, because Rodotà was a very well-known and famous civil law professor, served as the chairman of that committee, and we worked like for a year, roughly 2007-2008, to make a proposal in order to tackle the issue of the unprincipled nature of privatization through the law, okay? And this is where the commons emerged. This is where the commons emerged in Italy. As a tool to introduce some kind of principle against neoliberalism, okay? So, it was really in the discussion, it came out crystal clear, we started talking about the water was at risk of privatization all the time, but the idea was, if we get the commons will not belong to the state apparatus, okay? They don't belong to the private, they don't belong to the public, they belong directly to the community. And therefore, they can actually be taken away from the market, and they should be run in a logic which is different from the neoliberal logic. Okay? So the notion of the commons really emerged in the discussion of trying to rationalize property law, so with a very clear-cut mission that was established by the government to us, to the committee, in order to actually re-rationalize the whole public property system, and we came up with a new taxonomy of public property within which there was this first definition, legal definition of the commons. Okay? Goods that are functional to the full exercise of human personality, and that should be run in the interest of future generations. Okay? And therefore, you know, by putting in the interest of future generations and by putting in the connection with the with the satisfaction of the needs of the person, the idea was they have to be put out of the market. Saranno messi fuori mercato. So they would be a legal, protected area that, because of its functional purpose, will not be an area run by the neoliberal logic. So this is the, at the time, you know, the literature in the commons, we were talking about the early 2000s, and I think that in other experiences it was different, but at the time there was, you know, the work of Elinor Ostrom in economics, there was the first critique of Gareth Harding, there was all the, you know, but there was not much more than that, and there was no legal discussion about the commons at all. So the whole discussion was, is there a way to run economic functions in a way that is more, that is efficient, even if it's neither private property nor government. Okay, so the typical Ostrom paradigm. And was very marginal. In Italy, you know, in Italy, Ostrom was known to few economists that were interested in the stuff. I don't think it was yet a big shot stuff elsewhere. She had its own tradition. It became very big after the economic crisis of 2008, when she got awarded the Nobel Prize. Okay, because of the sort of feeling of guilt of the economic profession, and there was like this sort of 2 years in which they granted the prize to someone that was not an economist, basically. Okay, what happened next in Italy was that we proposed the thing, the reform never passed, the government falls, the parliament is dissolved, Berlusconi gets in power again. Okay, and now, by now we are in 2008. When Berlusconi goes to power, we are at the beginning of the crisis. Okay, Italy is under pressure. Everybody would be interested in doing whatever, but certainly not in doing introducing limits to the possibility to privatize. Privatization was rampant. The idea was either we privatize or we end up like Greece, except that Greece was not yet in troubles as it became later. But I mean, the narrative was exactly the same, right? Either you follow the neoliberal model, or, you know, the banks will take you, will not have the money to pay the current narrative, you know, terror, okay? And therefore, the situation was not good at all for passing out some sort of the reform of the Rodotà Commission. I mean, that's out of the question. Berlusconi proved particularly arrogant in his way to try to pursue, to go in the direction of privatization. In 2009, a law was passed that would oblige every single municipality in Italy. In Italy, we have thousands of municipal authorities. 70% of the current public property belongs to municipalities. Okay, it's still a very municipal kind of tenure system. Okay, so the public property, you know, from the cemeteries to the railroads to a lot of things, pharmacies, aqueducts, you name it. They all kind of belong to the to municipalities. So there was a law that was passed that said by December 2011, and we were at the time in 2009, by December to end of December 2011, every single asset belonging to the municipality has to go on the market and be auctioned out for privatization. Very, very blunt and radical move, okay? And that included water, okay? That included water, included, of course, the supply system of water, which is very delicate. Okay. All of that happened in a moment in which there were some rumors that maybe the commission Rodotà would be discussed, the commons would be discussed in parliament. It was actually the same day in which in the Senate they said, okay, we'll start the discussion on the product of the commons. In the Chamber of Representatives, they passed the law that obliged privatization of water. There was this complete schizophrenia going on. Clearly, the real game was on privatization, and the other side was giving the caramels to the intellectuals. Okay? So, oh yeah, you did a good job, you know, but there was nothing. Desperate, we go home, and so a group of people that we were in the Commissione Rodotà said we have to actually try to do a referendum. we entered in touch with the water movement that was originally, it was very, very articulated in Italy already at the time, because they had collected almost 500,000 signatures for a proposal of law, so there was some articulation. There was some articulation out there, not exceedingly organized, but it was out there. So we had this discussion with the, so the movement. We said, look, you know, you wanna, you like it or not, the referendum has to be done. And then ultimately everybody got excited in the referendum. Rodotà, myself, Lucarelli, we all wrote the Alessandra, we all wrote the question for abrogation of the law that obliged privatization. And during the referendum campaign, the Commons became a notion of political discussion, okay? So before it was either something done by lawyers in their own very technical thing, or something that had to do with the few economists that were interested in Elinor Ostrom, okay? With the referendum, of course, it became a public a concept of the public political grammar. And this was a big, big turning point for the Italian situation. And I think it is actually the thing that made the Italian experience particularly significant on this particular notion, because the referendum was called Due sì per l'acqua bene comune, so water as a common. And you know, we collected 1.5 million signatures. It was huge, three times as many signatures as were required. And ultimately the vote was 27 million people that said we don't want privatizations. And so it was a major, victory with no coverage from the newspapers, never got in television, you know, with no, really no support whatsoever from nobody. You know, it was a complete grassroots organization for over a year and a half. Self-financed, was very, very interesting, actually. Very, very random, very much of a sort of contamination effect without much organization, just talk here, talk there, and then you talk to 27
million as opposed to
27 million. It was more. It was 98% of the vote in favor of our proposal. Okay. There was in Italy. In order to get a valid referendum, you need a quorum of 50%, which is very, very difficult to reach. And it's very, very difficult to reach, because it was established in the law when people used to go and vote 90%. So now, in the whole Italian history, the quorum was reached maybe five times, only on very important things like abortion, divorce, you know, stuff like that, nukes. But it was never reached, you know, every year there are attempts to do referendum. Sometimes they go through, but it never get, you know, it's very, very difficult to get the 50%. We got 57% of the people going out there to vote, which was massive. Of those 57% people, 98.something% voted yes for up to abrogation. You have to consider that people that go vote yes, because if you are against the proposal, you just don't show up. It's easier to keep lower the quorum. Okay. So it was a very, very particular. I don't think that was ever in the history of the, certainly in the history of the neoliberal Italy, there was never a political victory of that proportion, but it was a big thing. And so the Commons became big. After that, already during the campaign, you know, there were a lot of very interesting signals that stuff would be said as Commons, like Labour is a Common came out. It was a big thing of the CGL, or you know. Lavoro bene comune, or you know, so Commons became. I remember I got in asili nidi sono un bene comune. No, the primary education is a common. The whatever was a common. Okay, it became really sort of an important grammar. I remember going to a meeting in a place in near Bologna that was latte materno bene comune. The milking of the baby is a common. Okay, so it was very, very broad. For many, many different small groups that would use and deploy the strategy, because it was looked like a winning strategy at the time. Okay. Day after the referendum was passed, the Teatro Valle was occupied. So June 13, 2011, the referendum results were announced. It was a shocker. Okay. June 14, the Teatro Valle occupato was occupied. on a platform that said, like water and like air, culture is a common. Okay? So the idea was an occupation that was the day after the referendum on the commons by a bunch of artists and other, you know, activists of a variety of ways that occupied the most beautiful theater in Rome. Okay? And the occupation of the Teatrale lasted for 3 years and was the one that developed, for example, the institution. It's really where the discussion on the commons as a legal category, not just in the technical sense, but in the broader constitutional, we said constituent level, okay, developed really. Because there was this guy who was called Stefano Rodotà, who was a very, 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 very charismatic individual. And one, you know, guy in his late 70s, the most established civil law professor in the country, a former member of parliament, former president of the Authority for the Privacy, constantly in TV, who had really developed a very particular relationship, political relationship with the people of Italy. People really loved him. And he was actually very much present into the Teatro Valle. We started discussing, which was an illegal occupation, right? But a bunch of us said, okay, it's not illegal, it's just formally legal. In fact, this is a constituent occupation, because what we are trying to do is to avoid the privatization of the Teatro Valle that was already decided, that was why it was occupied, and substitute it with a legal regime that puts culture as a common and keeps this value to the community. So we were trying to use the commons for the first time in a constituent way, okay? Not just as a notion within the order, within the established legal order, but as an interpretive notion capable of subversive interpretation of the status quo in the name of legitimacy, okay? So the idea is, a lot of the order of neoliberalism, the legal system of neoliberalism, many, many times is captured, is corrupt, is in violation of fundamental rights of the people. But the people, through constitutional principles, through commoning, through activism, are actually themselves proposing an alternative that might be formally legal, but in fact is a production of legality out of directly democratic means. Okay, so it was a very subversive move from the point of view of political theory, but it was very interesting because this was made by lawyers. Okay, so we're not a bunch of, you know, artists alone, or some blue collars in a struggle, or some occupants of squatters that were claiming the right of housing or whatever. It was not just the need into the political battle, but it was an articulation into technical legal concepts of this sort of insurgency, okay? And that lasted for another year. So after the Teatro Valle, there were other 7 theaters in Italy that were occupied. On the platform of the commons, there was a real network of occupied places. There was a movement that was looked very solid. Of course, it was not very visible internationally because it was the same time in which in Spain there was the Acampada, there were the Arab Springs that were much more massive in terms of people in the streets. But in terms of participation and in terms of actual elaboration and thoughts, I think the Italian Spring of 2011 was really, really important as well, because it was very much connecting also with those other movements. There was quite a lot of internationalist attitude. Okay? Of course, there were certain battles that were more visible than others. We had the Val di Susa here, Notave. We had a bunch of things, but you know, the whole kind of thing was kept together by this idea that we had to create the commons as a constitutional category capable of granting legitimacy to popular struggles. That was very, very important. Didn't last for enough. It was ultimately defeated. Mostly it was defeated because of infighting of social movements, as always happens. That's the way it works, at least whenever the left is involved in something. The So there was a lot of infighting. Of course, the condition changed. You know, the overall condition changed. So it's difficult to say what is the cause, what is the consequences. But something remained. Okay, something remained. We did, for example, you know, there was this thing that was called Costipente per I beni comuni. We went with the lawyers in the territories to discuss with the people about their own issues and struggles and talking about. So it was a very interesting attempt to bring the law to the people that was carried on. But it, of course, you know, we didn't have enough organization, enough resources. There were no political parties backing us. And actually, you know, Beppe Grillo and the Five Star Movement in a way hijacked a lot of that. So in a way, part of the you know, of the values from the water to the fights on the territory to the ecology to all these things, so it became the platform of the Cinque Stelle, and so was the whole thing was shifted a little bit far away from, you know, the front line of political transformation. You know, that is another thing that should be at some point understood. But anyway. So what happened next was that some leftovers remained, however. So if you're interested in the legal system. First of all, we got a decision of the Corte di Cassazione that was exactly in 2011, so during the exciting moment, that recognized the commons as a category in the Italian legal system in a decision on the Venice Laguna. Okay, so it declared that the Laguna of Venice was actually a common, okay? And therefore had to be protected in a certain particular way, and so on and so forth, and it was a very important, it was more of an obiter dictum but it was an important decision that we used a lot to say the commons are part of the Italian legal system. That's one thing. Second thing that then happened is that some occupation remained, and remained quite active, politically and also quite subjectivized legally. In particular in Naples, there were two things that remained, I think. One was the Asilo Filangieri, the experience of that you certainly know about because it's very much active, this guy that goes around and talks about it all the time. So there are these civic uses in the Asilo Filangieri. Basically, that is a particularly cozy relationship with the mayor of the city of Naples. It's a little bit like in Barcelona with Ada, you know, there they have another who is not as smart as Ada, but anyway, the magistris is very close, he likes to have this rhetoric that he is with the people, okay? Whether he's not or not, that's another question I'd rather not comment on. Anyway, they got a very close relationship with the magistris, and therefore they got recognized certain kind of public uses as civic rights, civic uses on certain occupied places. Not just the Filangieri, but also Jesopazzo, Lo Spunizzo. So there are a bunch of areas of Naples, some are very important, that are now considered usi civici, which means that there is a deliberation of the municipality that recognizes the place as a uso civico and allows the people to actually give self-organize according to a charter, the particular charter that is self-organized. The other thing that remained in Naples that was important was the transformation of the water company from a system of private property owning into a system of azienda bene comune. That was another attempt that we tried to do that didn't go very far, but the transformation legally was done. Okay, in practice, rather not comment on that because I was involved directly, but legally it happened. So from the legal point of view, we showed that it was possible to actually move from the private to the public and not just to the public, from the public to the private. Okay, that was a very symbolic, important thing to do, because as I told you before, the whole legal system is organized in a way that you can only move from the public to the private, and you can never come back. Whereas there was an attempt to actually show that there was a possibility also to come back. So that remained in Naples. In Torino, but you know the things, we had La Cavallerizza was occupied 4 years ago. That is another story that is particularly complicated. The place is very complex. There was some good coincidence that the previous mayor lost the elections, a new government went in power. There are really no money. There is really nobody who is interested in buying it, really. The occupation is producing some remarkable results from the point of view of culture. They have this very impressive exhibition every year. It's called Here, of a self-managed local art, international artist, is a good thing. But the part related to the legal elaboration and the governance is very, very messy. People fight all the time. It's an extremely tense, difficult assembly. You know, people go away. It's not the place where you go all night. You have fun to go to do politics. Okay, that's basically. Whereas at the Teatro Valle was the other way around. There was some harsh discussion. But, you know, there was a sense of being together. Whereas there is really a sense of fighting group against group. It's not nice, okay? But anyway, it's still there, and it was, and obtained some results. And then there are other places in Italy here and there that still, you know, exercise and experience the commons. As there is a very beautiful place near Florence, the Mondeggi Fattoria Senza Padrone, which is also a very interesting experience. There are quite a bit, you know, more or less important, but there are a few. And then what the other thing that remained from the legal point of view, so all of these places are all experiencing, trying to experience different government structures. Some are trying to use the Fondazione Teatro Valle as a model, like Mondeggi, for example, is trying to go in that direction. Others are using the example of the Asilo Filangieri di Usicivici, trying to persuade their own municipalities to make use of Civico, you know, things like that. But the thing that happened, that it was really happened from a guy who came a couple of times, remember, he came certainly at the Teatro Valle once or twice, Gregorio Arena, came out with this idea that we should imagine some sort of pact and agreements between the people, that he called the active citizens and the municipalities, in order to run certain things together, okay? That was very moderate, exceedingly moderate, full of very well-intentioned language, you know, old people taking care of the garden and you know, all the kids that actually will get some spaces in order to meet and play soccer in the afternoon, things like that, very minor kind of things, but in a language that was looking as a big transformation in the vertical position of the administration as opposed to the horizontal one that he was trying to show. This is, you know, my opinion, maybe they have another one, but my sense was that there was a language that was actually, in a way, introducing a counter-principle that can be quite revolutionary in public law, which is the non-verticality of the relationship of the private, of the public authority with the individuals, okay? But with the idea of this cooperation or collaboration, there is a more horizontal relationship in the administration. And that was a good thing, okay? It was a good language. In practice, they came out with all this narrative that the commons are neither right nor left, there should be a bipartisan project, that actually these regulations are good as long as they are voted both by the majority and the minority. So they went out with a very depoliticizing language that to me was offensive, you know, quite frankly. I mean, I you know, because I really thought that the commons was about, you know, being a militant, was about, you know, really having a platform of transformation of capitalism, really having a vision that was a vision against the system, maybe from within, but against, and there they actually came out with this very sort of sweet, you know, wishy-washy sort of let's love each other, administrators are good people, and we are, you know, we can do things together stuff. But that had an enormous success, okay? That had enormous success. It was approved by, maybe because of that, it was approved by, I think, almost
more than 150 cities.
Municipalities passed the
more?
Yeah. More than 150.
Every time I meet you,
yeah. They keep approving. And well, and you know, again here, this is a model, and it worked out in a variety of, you know, different ways. Naples doesn't have one, for example. This is an interesting point. You know, Naples, which is perhaps the city that was most on the map for the Commons, never passed the Regolamento. And this is for a clear political signal that the Regolamento is not the real thing. Okay. For example, myself, when I was the vice mayor of a small city around here, I passed one. I tried to introduce it, to move it in a more advanced way. In fact, I didn't pass it with a bipartisan vote. I passed with the majority vote. Because my idea was that that this regulation can become very important in recognizing illegal status quo. Okay? So occupations by you know, groups of people squatting and all sorts of things that actually do happen in the cities. If the municipality has that kind of scheme, it might become more difficult to kick them out. Okay, in a way, you know, I kind of try to structure the one in Chieri in a way that if you occupy, that is like an offer to contract to the administration. Okay, so interpreting the thing in a broader way, that model was, I believe, was an improvement or anyway a step forward. But you know, in Chieri there were no people to occupy nothing. People are too rich.
Chieri is the city.
Yeah, the small city in which. So there was no experience. Okay, in Torino, later on, quite later, I think it was like 2 years ago, 2016. Chieri was 2014. Then we did there the Commons Festival, International Festival on the Commons, in which, you know, a lot of people that internationally came there. It was Bandana Shiva, Tony Negri, Rodotà. So it was an attempt to make the different pieces of the movement, you know, talk to each other. I was fired because of that, and so that my administrative experience was gone. But in Torino, in 2016, they passed one of those regulations. And the regulation in Torino was a little better than the model in Bologna, I think. Tried to give up some of the more moralistic thing, like you cannot make even $1 out of something which is a commons. Tried to introduce the idea that, you know, maybe there are some sort of economic activities that can be carried on within the commons by the community, in order to obtain some sort of payment for labor. You know, it was a little more advanced from that point of view. No, just voluntarism, okay, but actually militancy in a way. Always, and that was part of the older majority, the Democratic Party. But it was made by, basically, I think that Alessandro, you were involved in that, right? So it was made by the left of the previous council that had a vice mayor who was actually a woman very much into social activities, and therefore she involved some of us in helping out, and they came out with this, you know, regulation. Now, however, we are rewriting that. So basically the thing is that there have been a lot of attempts to actually try to make this movement for a recognition of the commons, maybe just from the bottom up, but becoming so trying to find some sort of recognition into the national legal system, because so far it's just local regulations, okay? Mm-hmm. Local ordinances, local regulations, statutes of cities, but not anything different than that, okay? So now there is some attempt to actually lobby together with a variety of cities and the organization of the cities in order to make the parliament pass a law. You know, we have a new government that, who knows, you know, it's better also that to avoid comments. But you know, they've been talking a lot about participation. Okay? They've been talking a lot, they've been using deploying the commons, lead part of them. So who knows? Anyway.
They have also a ministry. About
direct
democracy.
Yeah. They have a minister on direct democracy.
How to kill directly immigrants.
Yeah, how to directly shoot the people.
Yeah, that's
into your piazza. Yeah. So it's a very ambiguous moment, and it's better to me at this time not to mess too much on that, but let's see. And anyway, Locally, however, we got from the Alessandro and others, they got a big European grant or something that is called CoCity to experiment urban regeneration in certain peripheries in Torino. Mm-hmm. And so that was made by the university, by the municipality, and that sort of triggered some idea that we were not just there to say crazy things like, you know, extreme gauchist, but actually, you know, we could provide some substance. And therefore, they said, okay, why don't you write a new commons regulation at the local level, because the other one was a little bit old. And we just finished yesterday to draft it. We will give it to the municipality probably next week. And basically there, what we tried to do was to go beyond just the idea of the contract, of the relationship between the pact, and to actually create a whole toolkit that the administration can use for the commons. So we have the pact, as on Bologna and Torino before, but we also have the CDQs in the sense of Naples, with some principles there that allow the municipality to do that. We have the temporary use, which is a way to give to the people when there is no decision made yet on either private or public property of a certain urban importance to run it. That is taken from, you know, mostly from German experience. And then we have the foundation. So the foundation, Fondazione Bene Comune, that is to say the possibility to actually take some important things, put them into a foundation, and make the foundation, of course, in the interest of future generations, with all the sort of governance structures that similar to those of the Teatro Valle, with donation, blah, blah, blah. With the idea, and this is really the step ahead, it seems to me, and this is the only part that if it goes through would be really cool, that if you do the foundation, there is the sense that if you do the foundation, you really solve the problem I started with. That is to say, you see, once this municipality takes, say, l'asilo Filangieri, right now is a public use, okay? Say that next time the magistris will not become the mayor anymore, and he loses the election, which is will not happen because he cannot run again. So next mayor, say that is instead of being a friend of the commons, become an archenemy of the commons and a super neoliberal hawk. Mm-hmm. The first thing he's going to do is to unmake the public use of the Filangieri, with no issue, no problem whatsoever. You know, after all, it's part of the public law of the city. He's done it. Of course, there is the possibility to resist politically, which is important. Of course, if something works for many years, you can resist politically. But the truth of the matter is that, legally speaking, the uso civico has no might. Whereas, if that would have been affected, given into a foundation, so say that you take La Cavallerizza, you make a foundation for the Cavallerizza in the interest of future generation, that becomes private property. Okay? And so the next mayor is screwed. As much as we are screwed when someone privatizes, you cannot take back, if someone commonizes by using the private law system, and so by creating a foundation, then the public system is screwed. So it's a counter-hegemonic use of private law that we are trying to make viable in order to say, okay, you get an administration that is hot on commons. Look, this is what the administration could do. If you want to say to your administration, be serious about what you're saying, you have to say to your administration, do this. Because this is the only way to secure, not just for you, but for everybody else later, that what you're doing is going to happen. Okay? And this is pretty much what we are, where we are now in Torino and in Torino and in Italy. Thank you.
So, thank you. And thank you very much for this detailed overview of what has happened from the 2000 to nowadays. And I think it's already merged between the lines of your speech. But I wanted to ask you if you could talk to us more in detail about the change of paradigm between the first era of the re-emergence of commons in Italy and now.
You mean theoretically
and even the way the social movements think about commons. I'm talking about the 2008 and now. You were talking about a way to resist to privatization, a way to fight against privatization. And I totally agree, so I learned it from you, so I have to agree. But I think today we talk about commons in a different way, but
yeah,
I don't...
Well, I was trying to show you that when the commons were introduced in Italy, it was a legal idea introduced by lawyers, not particularly progressive ones. I mean, you know, we were, some of us was progressive in the committee, but the majority of the committee was a committee of lawyers. So they were judges, they were, you know, other professors that were not like comrades or militants or nothing like that, okay? So it was a completely legal operation. But what was shared by everybody, and that was important, is that there was a need of some principles to avoid extreme unprincipled privatization. Okay? And that was part of a common sensitivity, seems to me, of the legal culture, which was a big result. Okay, already. Then, you know, there was the phase in which the commons became a political notion, it was successful, then a lot of militants came. A lot of those commoners didn't really like the lawyers at all. Okay, so the tension between the legal production and the social movement is there, has been there. It was magically solved at the Teatro Valle thanks to Rodotà, but generally speaking, it's still something that emerges all the time. And certainly here in the Cavallerizza, one of the big issues always that, right? The artists that believe that everybody who touches the law is a cop. Okay, so this notion that the law is about, you know, cops and robbers and so there is this very sort of, okay? I think that the second generation now is actually has been, on the theoretical point of view, we've been challenging the very positivistic vision in which the commons developed from a legal and political perspective. In other words, the commons are not something, they are something that always becomes, cannot be described objectively. There is no separation between subject and object. They are not just the third way between the private and the public. Are a different way to. They have a different phenomenology. Okay, it's a circular phenomenology. It vehicles ideas that are non-individualistic and are genuinely based on community. Okay, on communitarian values of sharing, of struggling together, things like that. So that's a point. In theory, this has been changed a lot. And so I think that Commons 2.0 has been exactly that. You know, it's not really something that can be, we cannot be satisfied even as lawyers to look at the commons as just another legal category to add to the ones we had before. It's an emerging, it's an interpretive strategy to actually, you know, work as a mold, to take away, it's very Marxist, you know, kind of Gramscian vision. You know, it's a way to actually erode terrain from the capital institution in favor of a vision and an anthropology that is not capitalist.
Yes.
And this is happening, and of course it's not happening, not everybody shares that. There is a lot of, you know, attempts to use the commons in a different way. There is debate in Italy, but that was certainly a new point. Sorry, in the practice there is the commoning. So there is this idea that the commons is not just an object, a dead object, but is actually practice, an activity, an action, a way to stay together, an emotion. So it became a little more to me about direct political government and institutions of direct political government and this attempt to create institutions of the commons.
Just on this point, this theoretical development has occurred mainly, in your view, in Italy, or it is international? Because I thought immediately of this book by C.K. Helfrich and Bollier, The Patterns of Commoning, which is against this idea.
Yes, there is certainly an international impact. The international debate, you know, there are international societies for the commons, there is the one of the Nostrum Society, you know, there are all things. Mm-hmm. Internationally, certainly there is a debate that it is quite advanced, but is not very much a debate between lawyers. Okay, yeah. So the Silke, there are a few lawyers there, like Bollier is a practitioner, but is mostly kind of a vision of the commons as a more of an interdisciplinary effort and so on and so forth. Which as lawyers, you know, we have contributed to that, but we also have taken some of the insight from there. So there is an exchange. You have to understand that Italy is a quite marginal, is a semi-periphery from the point of view of law. So if you write stuff in Italian, they don't get translated in different languages. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, books that had quite success in these areas have been translated not much.
Your manifesto has
been translated
in
Spanish.
I've tried to find an English translation.
Not in English.
Yes, I know.
There is in Swedish, there is in Spanish, and now there is in there is coming out in French any moment. So this is one thing. But it seems to me that the between the first and the second generation is probably more now a sort of let's try to do it and let's try to work out institutions that can work for the purpose, as opposed of let's resist, because anyway the resistance is not working so well.
Like using the legal framework to...
Because you cannot resist only with the law, you need to have bodies in the squares, otherwise you know.
I ask you because I think the new paradigm is, the other question was what's the connection between commons and civic use, which is not an immediate connection. We talk about civic uses, but even for me, when we talk about civic uses, I think about a political era in Italy and about practice, revolutionary practices, set up by workers in the countryside, in the south of Italy. I think about something which is political. The only legal category, it's not enough for us, that's why I asked you the change of paradigm about it. But before he goes away, I would like you to ask anything to Ugo, and after we can go on with Alessandro.
A little bit, yes, yeah. Last one.
Okay, last question.
Yeah, sorry about that, but it's already 4:15.
Okay.
It was very long.
A very practical and political question. How do you think that through the use of law, but also through other political practices, so it is possible now to promote a real alternative radical project of the commons under current conditions? I mean, since you said that now we're trying to think practically. So what could you do here in Italy now, and of course internationally, but let's talk about Italy, to promote the cause of the commons as an alternative to capitalism and so on?
Yeah, well, I think that there is a huge amount of political work that could be done and should be done, but nobody does it. So in the very sense of, you know, a work of organization, a work of maintaining the context, a work of creating the structure of communication. I think that there are so many experiences of commoning in Italy that don't talk to each other, that is really pity. There is no platform of common exchange. All of that requires organization and requires techniques to do that. That is what I think what would be the most important thing right now, really to try to organize what we have without trying to, you know, to use it and to deploy it to run to elections, without trying to create structures of authority, coordination, people, without creating institutional, constituted institutions, okay? But putting together and making these different places communicate really. And, you know, the one thing that I wanted to say is, say that tomorrow we wanted to do, to have the common movements appear. Mm-hmm. How will you do that? What is the address of the common movement? That's what I said to some people in Spain, in Athens, actually. with all this excitement, here it happens, here something said, where is the address? Mm-hmm. So who I'm writing to? I say, dear Commons Movement, you know, who am I talking to? Should I write to an intellectual? Should I write to who I'm writing to? Should I write to the magistris? To what? No, you know. But there should be a way to communicate in real time between those experiences, because there are things that could be done together. Like you need to react within 48 hours to something really bad that happens. It's impossible. You could not do it now. You could not bring the people of Europe, the commons of Europe, to know the same thing in the same moment and to do something. In Italy, my dream was to organize one day in which we occupy, you know, there were all these abandoned beautiful houses, to the case Annas on the territory. And these are really everywhere, because there used to be the places where the state, the government would keep the people that were taking care of the streets. Mm-hmm. And now they are all abandoned, they are beautiful, and they are always a kind of places that they are now getting sold here and there in a very... Those would have been a fantastic thing to do, you know. One day, we see how many of those we can occupy, you know. But you don't know how to do that. Why? Because there is no fundamental organization. So to me, this is the most important part at the moment, you know. So some sort of a political organization that is, however, not trying to create a political hierarchy. I mean, not Varoufakis, okay? Yes. If I can use, I mean, Varoufakis, I love the guy, but that is not the way to. Yeah. So it's not someone who represents the movements and say, oh, I miss the movement, okay? No.
In Spain, you have the Fundación de los Comunes, which has a lot of links with Italy.
Yeah, exactly. They're starting doing stuff. Yeah.
I mean, if something is threatened, the defense kind of gets coordinated very fast.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Just as the last word.
But in Italy, there is not. You know, in Italy, there is really not. There are not even, you know, the Teatro Valle, the organization of World Born Then, there is not even more. There is not even an address of email. I mean, yes, there is, but you know, there is nothing.
Just to thank you. Now, I just want to say that this question is one of the main, or perhaps the main question, of political theory. This project, how. I mean, the question of organization, what kind of organization?
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, I look at theory, we also look at practices to get ideas, but this is, for us, one of the main questions. And the other thing also, the importance of circulating and disseminating knowledge and connecting the dots. Because this was my personal observation at the beginning, that there are so many things happening in the three countries and many other countries, of course, and people don't know what is happening over there. And they could get a lot of feedback and ideas and that could contribute to their own cause.
Yeah.
And so,
how long is your project going to go?
Until the end of, until the middle of 2020.
Oh, good, so you have some time. But I'm sure we stay in touch, and
yes,
if we get brilliant ideas,
you.
We share them, and maybe something happens.
Yes.
Okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
And have a good day.
Ciao.
Ciao. Well,
continue.
You want a short break?
I could get myself a coffee from a machine.
5 minutes break?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just to get
some
coffee.
Okay. Yes, sorry. I will ask them again. Do you agree if we record our...
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Probably we can continue with questions and answers.
Could be good, actually.
If you have more questions.
Yes, definitely.
As you prefer, and because I told them that Hugo would have done the main speech and that with you we would have discussed about our questions. And so, as you know, they have worked with Hugo for a long time, and so they're lawyers both. And I think that if we want to continue with the topics that Hugo has talked about, we were very stimulated from his speech, so I leave you, ask something to Rocco and Alessandra, and they will decide who will answer to which question.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I just had a clarification question about the Cavallarizza, to ask them what specific strategies they are pursuing in relation to the legal aspect of the commons.
Mm.
Maybe it's really easy to answer.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious.
Okay.
I will say And
so probably I can give an historical background, because at the beginning of the occupation of Karlovica, the occupiers organized some group works,
mm-hmm.
and among those group works there was a legal group works. And
working group, sorry.
Mm-hmm. And so we started very early in during the occupation to discuss with the people who stayed there about legal strategies to defend the Cavallerizza. And in that period, I don't remember the year, but it was the very beginning, so maybe the first year of occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Ugo and I and another colleague who is studying for his PhD, this community land trust, which is a legal institution to manage immovables,
mm-hmm.
Creating a sort of sharing of the land rent,
mm-hmm.
In order to give an easy access to live in this dwelling. And in that period, we proposed to create a sort of community land trust for Cavallerizza. But probably it was not the time yet to propose legal tools, because the occupation was at their first steps.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't like our proposal, and they preferred to continue the political works, and they prefer to do not apply any legal strategies or dialogue with local institutions. And then in the last year they started this collaboration with the Asilo Filangeri, and so they start to consider the possibility to create an Uso Civico. And they are very lucky in this sense, because in the new major indicates as vice major one of the professor involved in the occupation, who
former member of the assembly.
Yeah, former member of the assembly.
Just a mayor.
Vice mayor.
Guido Montanari. He is an architect, a urbanist.
Yes.
And also one of the assessors to urban development, participation,
mm-hmm.
green areas, and so on.
Young policies, so he comes
from a left political path, so he is very very close
mm-hmm.
to the instances of Cavallerizza. And so they start to have a dialogue with the municipality using this strategy of Uso Civico.
Mm-hmm.
And but this part of the story, you know, this part of the story, they start this work every Sunday discussing sections of a sort of charter of Uso Civico,
mm-hmm.
like Naples,
mm-hmm.
In order to give this charter to the municipality and introduce Uso Civico in
mm-hmm.
Turin. It's not so easy, because the dwelling of the Cavallerizza is not all in all its parties, does not belong to the municipality. So a part belongs to the municipality, and then there is a part that belongs to national authorities,
mm-hmm.
and a part that belongs to
a special purpose bank.
Yes,
a bank.
In a process of dematerialization, it was sold to a private bank.
Mm-hmm.
So the application of Uso Civico, it's not easy, because firstly you have to decide where you want to apply it. Legally speaking, the only section of the building where you can apply this Uso Civico is the building that belongs to the municipality.
Mm.
For the other parties, you have to create a dialogue with private institutions or the national authority. At the same time, the municipality is trying to modify the regulation, as Hugo say. So we are trying to include uso civico in this new regulation in order to avoid to introduce a new legal tool created just for cavallerizza. We want to introduce a sort of general provisions for cases that are similar to cavallerizza, but not a special rule for cavallerizza. For us, this is a very important point. And so I think that they are waiting for this regulation, even if I well understood the ideas of the movement, they are not they don't agree to this idea that they must sign an agreement with the municipality to introduce uso civico. Because in the first part of our elaboration about the new version of the regulation, we have imagined to create a sort of general category of agreement called negozio civico, in which you find different types of agreements, and among them uso civico. Because according to a legal arrangement of this institution, the uso civico is not a typical issue, a typical topic of real property. It's not so easy to introduce the solution of Naples, because the people in the municipality are very afraid of this kind of solution for their personal liability, and so we need to create some tools that allow a sort of a pact between the occupiers and the municipality. But now we have changed the model, and we are trying to create again this idea of autonomous charters without an agreement between occupiers and municipality, with a sort of general regulation created by the municipality through which it recognized the existence of a general use of some spaces, and among those spaces the cavallerizza too. And then a particular regulation through which introducing the uso civico. So it is, but I don't know if at the end of this story the movement of cavallerizza will decide to apply this kind of arrangement. I don't know. This is the doubt of this story. There is first the problem of the municipality, because the vice mayor and want to adopt this regulation because it could be the first political important act of this government, because until now any promise of the political plan of the five-star movement has been applied here in Turin.
And he's not sure that
the progressive ones.
And he's not sure that he will go ahead with the government, because
yes.
We don't know if the vice mayor will remain in the government. So maybe before quitting,
so they
would
want
like
to give a signal to those movements that have supported them. And probably this idea of creating a uso civico in cavallerizza is a solution to obtain this objective. But I don't know if in the end this conflict inside the building and this idea to collaborate and create a dialogue and to co-produce and co-govern the space will be accepted by the movement. I don't know, it's very difficult to understand this point.
Actually, I wanted to ask a question to Antonio, even though, yeah, because I wanted to ask this question to Hugo, but he had to go. But from what I understand, in the framework of our project, we are trying to see whether these initiatives that we are studying, these groups of people, they have the the potential of creating social change, right? So from what I understood from Hugo's presentation, this commons debate in Italy came from his work and this commission and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that this is one of the cons in Cavallerizza and in other cases, because it is actually a top-down debate? Do you think that this affects it in a way that
it's an external debate more than
because they could
top yeah. now?
It doesn't even work as a top-down debate because they don't receive the debate from the outside. They talk about commons in places like Cavallerizza and other occupied spaces. They talk about commons, yes, from a legal point of view, because this is the main framework in Italy, I think we could say it. But they don't know very much about it. For example, the problems in Cavallerizza derive from the fact that only one or two two people into the space are the only ones who knows about civic use or about other ways to obtain the use of the space from a legally point of view. So, if I understand your question, I think it's not a top-down debate. We have somebody who is thinking about commons from an academic perspective, from a legal perspective, but not a real dialogue with the movements.
Antonio,
if it was the question.
Can I make a point on this issue?
Yes.
I think that, as Hugo said, it is possible to distinguish two sides of the same coin, of the same medal. There is not a very opposition between a top-down perspective and the opposite bottom-up perspective. In this respect, some scholars had put out a work, a scientific work on commons, born within a certain political and economic context. Then things happened in Italy. Between 2008 and 2011, simply social movements occurred. And then there had been a sort of maybe occasional alliance between these sort of cultural, political, and social inputs. So, in other words, I'm trying to tell you that adopting a more linear perspective by talking about a top-down direction as well as a bottom-up direction is not the better manner to address the question of commons as occurred in Italy, in my opinion. The Italian instance is truly about the possibility to shift toward a more circular perspective, and therefore you have some materials, you have to put on the table some materials, and then you have to work with them. This point is crucial, in my opinion, also in order to understand the huge debate and the huge dissemination of municipal regulations in Italy. Nowadays, in Italy, we have not a great and diffused, disseminated social movement about commons. We have a lot of experiences, but not a massive and sort of mainstream, allow me to qualify in this manner, the movement, such a movement. Still, we have, as I told you, more than 150 municipalities which adopted and still are adopting such regulations about commons. Here, in my opinion, we can highlight the ambiguity of the municipal perspective about commons. In other words, in the adoption of such regulation, you should find either a neo-corporative and more top-down oriented approach, and an attempt to carry out an enabling institutional pattern at the municipal level. Of course, the legal challenge is to work with such materials in order to allow the second pattern, the second model, to prevail and to take its own path.
Can I say something? To answer to your question, I think that there is a very concrete problem and a very concrete difference between Cavallerizza, Naples and Teatro Valle. And this difference attains the relationship between the movement and the legal expert. Mm-hmm. Because, as Ugo said, he went in Teatro Valle, and Rodotà was in Teatro Valle. Even if Teatro Valle was in Rome, they participated to the mm-hmm. political meetings, and they stayed there.
The first conference about the constitution of the common was with Rodotà.
And they wrote together the statute of the foundation of Teatro Valle, together, not a party to the movement and a part of
They were activists.
Yes, they were activists too. In Naples, the movement has his own legal scholars, his own lawyers. So without an external aid, they write their charter of Vito Civico. Here in Cavallerizza, the approach...
Can you repeat that from the thing? In Naples, what is the case?
The movement has its own legal experts, its lawyers, its legal scholars.
And why is that different from the case of Teatro Valle? I mean, they work together, but there were some lawyers, so...
But in some sense, they started as external experts, and then mm-hmm. they became activists of Teatro Valle. Mm-hmm. Here in Naples, the group was at the beginning composed by mm-hmm. legal scholars and artists and so on.
Yeah, I think the difference is that in Roma, the movement was born into the Teatro Valle. In Naples, we have social movements, antagonist social movements, autonomous. Who already had among them some lawyers who used the issue of commons to...
While here, in Cavallerizza, legal experts are considered as external members of the legal group, not of the assembly. We are invited to participate in special situations. We are not part of the group. We are just invited to give a special contribution to the debate. At the same time, as Ugo said, it's very difficult to participate to the assembly. So, as citizens of Turin, I don't want to spend my Sundays in Cavallerizza to give my skills, to give my expert advices, or simply to participate as an activist, because it's not a good
Do you think that's the cause, not the effect?
This is the cause. But I think that is a double cause, no? In part, you have this perception of the atmosphere and of the assembly. But at the same time, the assembly consider you just as an expert. So in some sense, this separation between experts, legal experts, scholars of lawyers and the movement remain Cavallerizza. The alliance between them is not yet arrived. So in some sense, I think it is it's not so developed as a theater of value. It is a very different situation.
I can say something more about this. I think that the main difference,
perception too?
Yes, obviously, the main difference is about the social composition of the movements we are talking about. Mm-hmm. When we talk about the Teatro Valle in Rome, we talk about an elite culture movement. We are talking about people who have studied, artists who lived in Rome, mm-hmm. who acted and worked in Rome. And in Cavallerizza, you're not dealing with the same kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
These artists, they are not aware of the cultural debate in this country, of the political debate in this country. I know just Federico and other two or three people in Cavallerizza who can talk with us about it. Is it true or is it just my... I'm not talking as a... I don't want to be snob or... It's very different. The social composition is very different. So from Cavallerizza, they feel you as an external expert because... You're a lawyer. I don't know how to talk with a lawyer. I don't
know.
You're
a professional.
You're a professor, a professional.
Right.
So, how do I talk? We can think about Tony, for example, an example of a Cavallerizza activist. He knows you, he knows very much about your work, and he knows Ugo Mattei, but he doesn't care that much about what you do during your. You have different objectives, different issues, different. So. You're not part of the same movement.
So they don't feel like they need you. Do they feel like they need you, for example?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, just when they know to have to give an answer to the municipality
mm-hmm.
or to correct the first version of the charter of the comune, they send us
mm-hmm.
to say, please revise it. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We went
just
to...
just a technical work. They don't ask us to give a political contribution or to discuss the political vision or the political objective of the legal tools. So in this sense, they have not understood the role of legal tools to obtain a political result. And this is the very huge difference with the Teatro Valle.
What about Naples? Sorry.
What about Naples?
Yeah.
In Naples, I think that We are talking about, referring to Naples, about social movements which have a very long history.
Mm-hmm.
Naples, in Turin, the former social movements and social centers of the city tried to go into Cavallerizza and to act into this process, but they quit at the end because they fight a lot with the people who are inside right now.
Mm-hmm.
And in Naples, no. The network of civic users who work with the magistris, the social movements we are talking about when we talk about commons in Naples, are social movements which remained into this process. So they had a former political activism, a former political experience, a former political thought. In Cavallerizza, many people in Cavallerizza tell me, okay, we are not politicians. Cavallerizza is not politics. Cavallerizza is art. Cavallerizza is... They talk about something else. They tell you, art is already politics. And you say, okay, but in what sense?
Yeah, but then maybe you need some tools.
No,
but then some fuller tools. Maybe I can add something about, you know, specific specificities of Cavallerizza and, you know, the local context of Turin. For example, talking about art, the point is that are you doing something different, anything different from other art events? Like yesterday we were talking about Paratissima, you know, this big
Are you experimenting this or not? I mean, here this big art event took place in May, was probably the highest, the best event of the year, but somehow it was not that different of other events where they would bring artists, maybe asking money to stay exhibiting the thing, but then there were no collective works, for example, even the kind of art, I mean, was the place was site-specific, the place is beautiful, but probably that was the best hype of the event. So at the end, you can even pretend to be not an activist, but an artist, or vice versa, you know, not an activist and not a politician or not a technician. But are you doing anything different from the rest, aside from the art market, from the
cultural production?
Cultural market production. It is true that there's no ticket to enter the event. There's this up-to-you ticket or capsized ticket. At the end, you decide how much to give.
And you're occupying the space.
And you're occupying the space, but, you know, it's a bit of a farce because all the negotiation with the administration allows you not to be evicted. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, this is what I wanted to highlight. The social movements of Torino, the other activist groups, they haven't liked much. For example, the big meeting between with the two mayors of Naples and Turin, Appendino de Magistris, and the assembly has been attacked, and some other groups stopped using Cavalrizza as that neutral place to meet, as we were saying yesterday, like, you know, having this place in the center that it's not too much ideological and could have people merging and, you know, confronting themselves. This is something that at this point is at a standstill, because those groups are not coming anymore, having the meetings in Cavalrizza, and this is a big failure to me.
What groups are
they? Groups, for example, the no 2026 Olympics, the other migration roundtable prefers to meet in a social center. That then means that other group, it's a social center of let's say autonomous communists, and then the anarchists wouldn't show up. And Cavalrizza was that attempt to have in town something more accessible. And this after, so this negotiation that went through, that kept going, it's making things more difficult at that level. I'm talking about this social movements. Now, another thing I wanted to say, that Cavalrizza is used by the five-star administration as the let's say the flagship, the crown jewel of this participatory process making. You know, it's a UNESCO heritage listed massive building, so it's very downtown. It's in center. It's beautiful. It's 5 minutes from Piazza Castello. So that's the best place to pretend to be different than the presidential administration, to be different than the Democratic Party, and then to say, look, we've done this. But the five-star administration with other public goods is doing exactly what the Democratic Party administration had been doing. So just let's be aware of this. And you know, let's see how it will really end up the story. Because I mean, it is true that the deputy mayor is a former member of the assembly, and for sure is involved. But even his attitude when he became the deputy mayor has changed dramatically. And first, we were not that happy about that. Just to, these are, let's say, local dynamics, but to say that, you know, the perception of this process, and some of the people active in the assembly and living Cavalrizza belongs to this old school activist group mentality that, you know, if you're occupying, so the clash is between civic use versus legalizations of occupied places. And this is considered to be bad, according to some of them.
What?
The recognition of a civic use compared to an occupation.
Can I
some points, some remarks with regard to such a sentence. I think that Turing nowadays has to face sort of its political and social heritage. Turin is a city characterized by a peculiar local context, as you said. I think the main element to underline is the tendency, the trend toward fragmentation on one side. On the other side, Turin...
Sorry, you talk about fragmentation?
Political
social movements?
Among social, within social movements.
Yeah, that's it.
Moreover, Turin used to be characterized by huge autonomous leftist social movements, and such a peculiar historical element maybe helps us to explain such a refusal toward the legal mediation, and such a diffidence toward legal efforts. Law is always mediation, intermediation. Law is per definition, per se, an infrastructure that allows different, several societal mediation. And therefore, this point can be stressed, in my opinion. The second point is a sort of a parallelism between Turin and Naples, because it was just a couple of weeks ago we were in Rome for an academic initiative, and a colleague from Naples told me that nowadays within the Asilo Filangieri they are starting to face some similar problems, because the more legally expert activists are more and more going out of the current occupation, the current management of Asilo Filangieri. In the situation of Asilo Filangieri, I think that such a choice is not a political choice. I disagree with the decisions, and then I quit the occupation. Maybe it's life. You know, you are 30 years old, 33 years old, and therefore you cannot invest as much time as you have invested till now. Maybe it's just such a if you want material reason, but the colleague of mine told me that still there in even there in Asilo Filangieri they are trying to match the difficulties to face the difficulties coming from the lack of expertise and the presence of artists who are not so interested in the legal elements of
maybe the problem is that Micharelli has to finish his book, so he has no time to stay with them.
Well,
<I'm>
finished.
Ah, it's okay.
Comedy.
Everything. It's like everything. Sorry.
Yes, I have two general questions, and I think that both of you could answer, or whoever wants from you. The first is, Ugo Mate mentioned that in passing, but I think it was an important point, about the idea of eroding the system or capitalism and so on. So working at eroding.
Mm-hmm.
That it's working from within in order to change, not in a more classical, confrontational way or revolutionary way, or even the classical reformist way, that when you take a government and you just manage the system. Mm-hmm. I'll try to change it gradually from within in through quite active interventions that have a transformative potential. So I would like to ask whether you think that, how you think that law can be used in this way, and whether you can consider an entire political strategy around law and the erosion of the system. So that's the first thing. And the other is relevant to the person that you have just mentioned, and is whether there are different legal approaches to the commons in Italy, because Govante mentioned Arena and the regulations, and I've met him, so I've read part of the regulations that I can understand at least, and I know also Micharelli, his emphasis on civic use, and your own approach. So are there any substantial differences from a legal point of view, or a strategic point of view, or whatever point of view, in a way that, as lawyers, or as jurists, you approach the commons and the questions around the commons?
We are private lawyers, so this is the first big deal. I will return on this one. I can say something if you want.
Okay, let's go.
For your first question, I think that according to a legal point of view, the only strategy to change the system, actually, is to work within the system and against the system. In order to introduce a sort of reform or revolution of the legal system, you need a law, and to have a law you need a parliament that decides something, that decides to introduce a reform or a new legal text, or to introduce new rights and so on. And our idea is that now it's quite impossible to work as the advisors or the technicians of the prince, in some sense. No, we have not parliaments that are friends. We have not the possibility to influence the legislative, the decision makers and the legislative process. So the most interesting things, and probably the most useful, is to use the legal framework you have. So without changing the legal rules, you can give a different interpretation according to a different set of values. We are trying to use the existing civil code of the existing legal paradigm or institutions to give them a new meaning that is characterized by an innovative ecological or solidaristic approach. It is not so difficult because you have to consider that the Italian legal system is very ancient. Our civil code was approved in 1942 and there were a fascist government in that period. So a lot of rules can find a new meaning according to the new economic and social context. In this sense, we are trying to create a new dialogue, if you want, between the legal scholars, judges, and at the end, the lawmakers, in the future, a new lawmaker, a new parliament that is able to introduce legal reforms will arrive. But now I think that in Italy, it is very interesting, the fact that the most important change in law arises from jurisprudence. If you think to revolutionary decisions in the last years, all the decisions of the Constitutional Court about the electoral law, we are waiting for
corruption. Everything about corruption is like that.
Everything about corruption. We are waiting this decision about DJ Fabo, Marco Cappato, and the possibility to dead
family law.
We have a lot of things that arrive from judges. So the point is that we must create, we must rediscover, if you want, as legal scholars, our potential to influence these judges in order to introduce commons or solidarity mm-hmm. or an ecological approach in jurisprudence. This change is very useful.
Mm-hmm.
This change is very useful. So this idea that you have a very diffused systems of decision, a very horizontal possibility to modify the law throughout this kind of dialogue, it's a way to change concretely the system. And this is a strategy. The other strategy is to test in your everyday relationships, that are relationships of private law, when you sign a contract, when you own something, in the way in which you use tort law liability, you are testing, you are using private law. So, for this reason, first I said, we are private lawyers. We are studying, we study the sets of rules that every day each of us use, normally. In a very horizontal and peer way. So it is a very interesting to say, well, we are using property, we are using contract, we can experiment and apply in a different way from the text of the civil code or the text of the law. We can introduce innovative elements, and these innovative elements can change at the end of the paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
This is the challenge, if you want, for a private lawyer. And I think that this is the main difference between a private lawyer, so us, and Gregorio Arena, for instance, living outside of this thought, the political position. Gregorio Arena is a public lawyer. He used to think to legal categories, thinking to a relationship between the public authority and private individuals. So his challenge is to create a horizontal relationship rather than a vertical one with this idea of collaborative administration. But he needs regulation created by an authority. We are saying that we can, as private, in private law, create our own rules, and we can introduce innovative principles without a hierarchical organization determined by the lawmakers, because we have judges. I don't know if it is clear, but it's the idea that you can have a diffuse production of rule, and you can exploit networks to improve the system, and you can exchange practices, and these practices, as customs in some sense, can exchange law. Okay. And for Micharelli, I don't know, I have no idea, because I think that Giuseppe has a very theoretical approach to these issues, because he's a philosopher of law, so he generally does not manage with concrete regulations, probably. And then another part of your question was, there is a political strategy, no, in this use of law. I don't know, I think that it is very difficult in this period to understand how to deal with the organization problems. I think that we need to I often say we need a sort of ethnography in private law, because we need to study the different forms of self-organization, because for us self-organization means production of rules. Production of rules. For me, a self-organized group is a group that produces its own rule. And for me, it's very interesting, because it is working with law, but in a different way, usually in this period in particular, because of the effect of the crisis, I think. They are producing law. They are producing rules.
Autonomous.
Yes. But in
legal order.
Within and against, no? And so the risk is that you have different legal orders that can fight against each other or can ask for autonomy from the top level. But at the same time, you have the possibility to demonstrate that the change of law is already designed. And so I don't know, I have not a legal strategy. I think that we have to study in this period because it is very difficult to indicate a political way to do something.
Mm-hmm.
We have to understand and we have to present some new organizative tool. And I think that we have to communicate the idea that also in Cavallerizza you are doing politics. That there is not a difference between the politics in the parties and the politics in occupying the commons. No? And so, from my point of view, the political aspect of self-organization and the legal aspect of self-organization are strongly connected.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yes, totally.
Can I stress a few points of Alessandro's discourse?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that maybe as lawyers, at least as mainstream within the profession, the professionalism of law, we have forgotten the correct, the right place of law within institutional biggest institutional systems. In other words, we have naturalized the idea that the law is the product of the political. And when I say political, I give to political the very modern and 20th century oriented meaning. I think that, and I agree with Alessandra in claiming for a discussion, an open discussion about the correct place of law and law production within such system, the political, the economic, and the social, for being very very synthetic, as well as a claim for a discussion about the place of the political.
Mm-hmm.
The political is everywhere. Is not only representative democracy. Is not only the sovereign. And in this respect, I think that the discourse about commons can acquire further value.
Mm-hmm.
For example, is the sovereign, the political sovereign, representative sovereign, able and allowed to put something out of commerce and market because of the legal qualification as commons? In my opinion, the answer to this question is no, of course. A political, a traditional political decision has not on its own the force, the effective force to put something out of the economic. Why? Because economic nowadays governs such technologies that allows the economic, the capital as a social relationship, social and economic relationship, to acquire, to conquer the commons. In this sense, the reflection and the discussion about case law, about the relationship between lawmakers and judges, is very important. Why? For two reasons, at least, in my opinion. The first one is that in Italy this discussion is quite traumatic. because we are a civilian country. We come from a civil law tradition. We are used to familiar with a system of sources of law centered on the idea of the political sovereign that products which products mm-hmm. law. To highlight the role of self-organization as well as case law within the system of sources of law is in itself an attempt to challenge a mental scheme, mm-hmm. Some coordinates, some building blocks of our mentality as lawyers as well as citizens, of course. The second element, in my opinion, is that commons are deeply about remedies, legal remedies, conferred and recognized in favor of commoners. Since the Rodotà Commission's proposal, we try to point out the idea that the remedy concerning the legal remedy concerning injunctions, aimed at avoiding threats or damages against commons. Well, such remedies have to be disseminated and diffused among the commoners. Each and every commoners should have the possibility to go before a court, before a judge, claiming for the protection of commons. If you think about such a functioning of a technical, pretty technical tool, such a legal remedy, you can pass, you can go toward the idea of the value of commons. When the remedy is open to each and every commoners, it is difficult even to conceptualize a system of exclusive legal entitlements that is the base for conceiving a price for commons. And in this sense, you should be allowed to say that commons are priceless and commons are out of market. So, in order to come back to my first sentence, commons can be qualified as out of market because there is a legal infrastructure that makes such an effect possible, not only because of a political and sovereign decision. Am I clear?
Yes.
Ugo and I have are in charge for the International Academy of Comparative Law to do an international research. The title is Property Meeting the Challenge of the Commons.
Mm-hmm.
So this international institution asked us 2 years ago to compose a questionnaire through which investigate the transformation of the paradigm of property in several countries according to the main elements and characteristics of the commons. We have composed this questionnaire with the open questions and factual cases that need a legal solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent to the Academy this questionnaire, and the Academy found for us more or less 15 or 16 countries in the world that answer to this questionnaire. And it is very interesting, mm-hmm. because they immediately understand the problem,
in all the countries or in all the national reporters, we have an immediate understanding of the fact that privatization and the crisis of the public domain needs a new category. So they understand this category of the commons, they can explain according to their own national legal system in the first part of the questionnaire. So when they answer to the open question, they say, okay, commons are perfect, we can understand them, we can introduce them. The national reporter from the United States say that is an anthropologist, Monica Eppinger is her name, I don't know. If you met her, she said, we can speak about an analytic category of the commons. We can introduce the idea of analytic commons to indicate not only the legal arrangement of the commons, material or immaterial resources, but to include also the practices of a community in a place or in a space recognized as a commons. Then, when they give us the answers for the factual cases, in every answer, property rights prevail on the commons, always. So there is a very important division between the legal scholars and the way in which the jurisprudence apply law. And so my question is, what have you done during the period of the privatization? Because you are a legal scholar, you have your task is to give your suggestion, to comment laws, mm-hmm. to introduce new ideas, so that you can influence judges. How is it possible to have this kind of gaps, no? Between doctrine and jurisprudence? They appear as separate words. This is incredible. And I think it is, we have not Greece, among our national reporters, mm-hmm. because they do not transfer. So if you know a legal scholar interested in participating, give us the name, because it is very interesting. We are waiting for Spain, mm-hmm. for instance. For instance, if you take into consideration the national records of the post-Soviet era, it's incredible for us to apply a new idea of collective between public and private. We have the report from Russia, Croatia, Slovakia. It's incredible. I think it's very interesting for you.
Can definitely, yes.
One further point I forgot.
I can send you the draft if you
want. Yes, and I can contact at least three colleagues of yours and mine, but there are lawyers, actually. They are professors of law.
Just a final remark is about the idea and the objective of eroding the capitalistic system.
Mm-hmm.
My personal perspective is that we should be very, very concerned in the attempt to create counter-majoritarian legal institutions,
mm-hmm.
legal and political institutions, because nowadays the wind is rather clear, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
the institutional, the political, the emotional wind is rather clear. The trend is toward more and more identitarianism, more and more claim for protection granted by a strong authority because of social processes occurred during the last years, and you certainly know about it. For such a reason, I think that commons are a crucial point in our strategy, because commons are deeply about a counter-majoritarian approach to our everyday life. For example, a commons can be part of a broader urban context. How can we deal with the legitimizing principles and criteria in order to manage and govern such a commons? Indeed, there are different, not in my opinion, not opposite, but certainly different criteria, institutional and legal criteria, that can be used to conceive commons, and the heritage of the French domanialité, the public domain, according to the French perspective, borrowed by the Italian system, for instance, is obviously about such a different within the criteria adopted in order to legitimize collective use. Nowadays, demanio pubblico, public domain, in Italy, in France, is the property of the public authority as a person, as you were said. And indeed, in 2006, in France, they came out with the Code General de Propriété des Personnes Publiques. So they recognized the idea of a individual property, individual ownership of public authorities conceived as persons. Commons highlight the moment of use, collective use, and of access, of open access, of course. Something similar occurred in 1942 with a book written by Norberto Bobbio in Italy at the beginning of 1942. He wrote, he is renowned as a positivistic, formalistic legal philosopher and scholar. Well, in 1942, he wrote a book about customs as a source of law, and he tried a cultural operation aimed at enabling customs, the factual dimensions of uses of customs. But why such an attempt in 1942? Mm-hmm. Because the common sense is in Italy is in 1942 was a fascist one. So according to the general conception about customs, you have to take into consideration the factual moment of usus, of use, of collective practice, mm-hmm. as well as the common opinion about the normativity of such a use. Mm-hmm. In that age, Bobbio left a side of the picture of the legal construction, the moment of the opinion, the common sense, in order to fight against a common sense from a counter-majoritarian perspective. I think that such a souvenir can be considered as an important and teaching instance for our days.
Mm. Thank you. Bobbio wrote this book in this department.
Oh, wow.
No, because it was in this department.
Why?
I wanted to say.
Do you really prefer the term counter-majoritarian rather than counter-hegemonic? Because by positive that's counter-majoritarian, it means that in general we are against majorities.
Mm.
So it may appear as an elitist viewpoint.
No, I don't
think this is your...
I understand your question. I hope that I'm not an elitist researcher and citizen and activist. But I think that we should point out the difference between a strategic and a tactical
yes,
dimension.
But why not counter hegemonic?
I think the perspective is a counter hegemonic one.
Okay.
Within such a strategic perspective, some tactical tools that we could or maybe should use could be inspired, informed by counter-majoritarian criteria in order to allow room for alternative manners to of being together in everyday
really?
Life.
I wanted to try formulate a question a little bit in relation to this conversation we had yesterday with Sammy, and also in relation to what you were talking about with the social composition of Kavalerica, which is a little bit about class also. So it's a bit tricky, but I wanted to think a little bit in terms of, because there's often this accusation or perception or whatever that commons is a quite middle-class politics. So in some sense, that's one of the things that kind of came to my mind when you were talking about this sort of social composition of these assemblies and how this kind of process in relation to the legal goal, and the perception of the professional or
mm-hmm.
these class terms or whatever. Sort of wondering what kind of class interests are predominant in different kind of experiences of commons or because maybe it's interesting to think of in terms of class interests also in some sense. I'm really making this question up a bit as I go along. But thinking about, on the one hand, like we're talking a lot about space, and CBQs, which is about some kind of shared space or stuff like this. But then, for instance, questions relating to labor or also to maybe housing, spaces housing. Because yesterday Giovanni was sort of speaking about this kind of generation of declassed or whatever you want to call it, kind of middle class people that are sort of engaged in some kind of in associations or different practices of commoning that might have some property to fall back on from their parents but are essentially gonna have to be forced to sell that probably within the next 10 years or so. So he's kind of predicting a kind of crisis, a social crisis, and he wasn't giving a very optimistic picture in terms of where that will go when this kind of generation of people will kind of stop being able to live off these properties and renting them out, Airbnb, all this kind of form of life. And then we were talking a little bit about temporary use also, so that's also something I wanted to ask because Ugo brought it up as one of the points in the
mm-hmm.
municipal thing you're drafting. because he was speaking, Giovanni yesterday was talking about very widely known critique of this kind of use of temporary use as a kind of very gentrification promoting measure, etc., which again kind of ends up serving capital in the end of the day. So it's not like a super spearheaded question I have. I don't know if it's useful as a comment, but I was kind of thinking a little bit about, on the one hand, beyond the question of just use of space, and maybe also in legal terms, what kind of perspective, a legal perspective on commoning mean for like labor, for instance, or for maybe spaces housing or something like this? Very open question. But and just this question, a little bit of class interest. I don't know if you have reflection about this from Kavalerica and so on. Like it's very difficult to talk about this in a way that makes sense, but if you have any comment on this, it would be interesting.
Okay.
I'm quite skeptical on this use of middle classes or classes. I have no precise idea on this point, but I'm very quite skeptical because I think that it's very difficult to speak about classes today. And I think that it's not useful also for political objectives because all create a new political movement starting from precarious workers failed. So the assumption probably was wrong. No? The idea that the precarious workers can recognize themselves as partners of a political fight. Why? Giovanni could say they have a house, they can use the land rent to survive, so I don't know if the economic crisis is so strong, but I just want to provocate.
If you think of interests, shared interests, maybe we aren't enough in class.
I think that this idea of the commons is a way to say we share something. And this is the reason why, in many cases, we used to say that it's a sort of commons have a void significant. You can put into this category the kind of fight for which you are engaged. And in fact, after the experience of Theater Valle, when you go say the Not Have movement use the idea of the commons, the Democratic Party too, understood in 2013 that commons was a fashion concept and apply it to call the political alliance to national election. So I think that this idea of the commons is very post-political in some sense, because it is very, very, very difficult to identify to use the coordinates of the century before. You cannot speak about classes, you cannot speak about left and right, and this is true. I'm not happy for this, but this is true. And when we organized the referendum against the water privatization, it was not so clear the participation, the political orientation of the movement, because a lot of people from Lega participated to the referendum.
And we didn't expect such a participation. Yeah. It was unexpected.
Well, yeah. It was a way to defend the local territory, not the local resources in some sense, according to their political point of view. But I think that we cannot apply the old legal category. So I don't know if we can speak about classes for describing the commons, because it is very, very, very different. Because then if you go to Mondeggi, or if you go to Naples, or here, or Rome.
Well,
you cannot speak about party politics.
Party politics.
But post-political is not a term I would feel comfortable in describing. I mean, in my case,
yeah.
Yes, party politics. Even though the subjectivities of the individuals that participate are informed by their political identity and their political belonging, because they all belong, or they all vote for a certain party. But I think that they are political.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. In fact, I'm saying that you cannot apply the old category.
Yes, that's true.
So, in some sense, you need something to explain this kind of engagement. But this is your task, no?
Yes, exactly.
This is your research. I think that we are not able to use the expressions, the way to the division, the separation, the line between movements, outside, inside the commons, to explain what now is happening. I think that unfortunately, in 2011, it was clearer than now. Now, it is very difficult to understand within the movements this point, but the assembly of Cavallerizza is interesting for this point, the anthropological, no, composition, because you find everything.
Perhaps
I don't know,
Alexandre, would you be comfortable in using the term postmodern?
Mm.
Oh.
No.
But
indeed, sorry.
No.
Indeed, I think that the major challenge is to find some sort of connection between the political as well as legal claims coming from the experiences of commons and of commoning on one side, and the attempt to imagine and experiment some sort of political organization in order to link to enable and to make stronger such experiences. In other words, the problem is the problem of the political party. The political party as social legitimized institution is in a certain way dead with following the death of a broader social equilibrium, in my opinion. And therefore the challenge of the distribution, dissemination, legitimation, and exercise of power is an open question. Commons are one attempt among several in order to find some ways to reconstruct patterns, scalable patterns, in order to find a more desirable distribution of power, in my opinion.
In the case of Manuela, I mean, Barcelona and Comú, I don't know, how would you,
Yes, of course, but the problem, Emilia, sorry for the interruption, the problem, in my opinion, is that we have not the possibility to conceive the winning of the election as our final objective.
Okay. Yeah. I think that we have lost the moment in some sense. But maybe I have already...
Like it's too late.
To reformulate my question in a slightly different way, but it's something that's...
But before you reformulate, can I say something about Klaus and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, because I'm not sure I agree with the fact that we can't talk about classes when we talk about social movements today, because there's a big difference inside the movements and among the people who participate into the same movement.
Mm-hmm.
You were telling me about Cavalleria before. It's true, the Assembly of Cavalleria is very mixed, and inside the group which participate to this movement is...
And they you
can find many
classes.
But if you go into Cavalleria, you can find people who live at the first floor, who are people who are very, very connoted as a class, because they are working class or people who has
would say
anything.
Dropouts.
That's it.
Dropouts.
More.
Mm-hmm.
And in the other space, I was talking with them about it this morning, in the other space where they live and where they sleep, you can find artists like Jesus or other people like this, who are burghers who come from very different social milieu and very different, and you have this distinction inside the same movement. So I
but
think
they share something.
They share almost nothing. I can
you
I can guarantee
nothing.
You what do they share? It's just to make an example, it's not just Cavalleria. Maybe in Naples we have different, for example, the XOPG Jesu Pazzo as a very, very working class social composition, because they're...
Imagine.
Yeah, they're Marxist-Leninists. But because they act, live, and politically they act in a specific neighborhood, which is a poor neighborhood, we are in a... And there's a big difference with the ex-asilo Filangieri, and it's not just a difference that I can see because I'm a political anthropologist, so I can see it. Mm. They talk a lot about it. When you talk with people from the XOPG, they tell you, oh, people from the ex-asilo, they're radical chic and intellectuals. And, this is very, very much said. They use the words, they use the class discourse to position each other and to for the distinction from each other. So I think we can still use this kind of framework to think about what is happening in the social movements today. If we want to understand why something is going wrong, it's just an opinion from the field.
As I have already said, I think that we need a social theory of the commons. We don't have a social theory of the commons.
Yeah. We are trying. This is our goal.
But I think that you have to speak with Michel Espanon. You need this discussion.
I won't.
Because he can... Michel Espanon is a colleague of us. Mm-hmm. He's a philosopher, but a legal scholar too.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's in Paris. And he studied the commons, Michel Foucault, and so on. And his ideas about this point, even if from a theoretical point of view, this is the limit, because you are describing experiences that you have already observed in some sense, why our idea is more general, if you want, no? To say...
yes, but the goal is the same, is to...
Yes, but the idea is that in this situation... if you do not consider the starting economic situation, you can different classes using this kind of languages, people who belong to different classes share with other some points thanks to the consumption. And this point is very interesting, I think, and in some sense this is the point that in the logic of the commons allow to me to stay with persons that have a lot of have a social and cultural background that is very different from the mine. So I don't know, I think that you have to think to this point and speak with Michele, because it could be very interesting for you, and it is able to explain more than me the point. So.
Yeah, I'm very curious to...
And I want to before you ask a thing about labor, no? The working possibility connected to the commons. Is
it
correct?
Yeah. I mean, one way that I was thinking I could ask my question differently would be, because now we're kind of talking about commons very much as social mediation somehow, in relation to what you were saying about law and so on. And my question went more towards, like, how do we think commons in relation to social reproduction? You know, so that could be.
Yes, I think that the point is that we can use commons as a solution to produce a welfare from below, in some sense. This is the challenge, and in fact I think that in this possibility to use the expression commons to explain very different things, we use commons also to indicate the co-production of services, for instance. And if you take into account the works of Yochai Benkler about the commons, peer production,
mm-hmm.
and so on, you are considering this possibility to use social relationships to create services, to create goods, to use the overcapacity of things. So I think that we can imagine that the commons are also a set of innovative economic practices.
Sure. I mean, yeah, on many levels.
Yeah.
I was wondering just if legally there's anything specific about that legally, that because I'm pretty clueless about law, to be frank. I'm wondering about labor law and, like,
now, probably the only issue that could be relevant is the framework in which you include the commoners as volunteers or as workers.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in this in the application of the regulation of the commons, there is an important debate about the fact that the citizens are working for free for
mm-hmm.
the municipality because at the end they take care of a urban garden and so on, so they are making the work
mm-hmm.
of the municipality without having paying off of this.
Yes.
So the point is the commoners are volunteers or are workers or are political activists. For instance, Hugo say this is a form of political activism. They are not volunteers as the classic no-profit logic, but it is a way to have a political engagement. But at the same time, I know, if I remember well, for instance, at the first part of the occupation of Cavallerizza, this was a point, how we can give a sort of, not pay, because it is not correct, we can recognize
yeah.
the work
value.
Of the,
mm-hmm.
the value,
yeah.
yes, of the time, of the engagement,
yeah.
of a volunteer in taking care of Cavallerizza. Using also, for instance, you know Diego Di Carlo.
Yeah.
He proposed something like
Cavallerizza coin.
Yes, Cavallerizza coin.
Yeah.
To obtain this kind of result,
mm-hmm.
to give a value with the digital currency to the time you employ in Cavallerizza,
mm-hmm.
and use this coin
to be spent even in the neighborhood. Because
yeah.
that's another big issue
mm-hmm.
for Cavallerizza compared to the other spaces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much of a connection with the neighborhood, which is very central, very
you
commercial.
There's no neighborhood.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And this makes a difference even in the class composition somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
The only relationships are like
no,
like guy, no. no, denunce.
Yeah.
No.
Yes, there are
for the visit to Cavallerizza
for the dinner.
You saw it in the mail list?
Because I had another good question, but I'm not going to ask now because we're
okay.
all tired.
Are we going to cover it now?
Yes, if you want, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe they will join us for dinner.
So close.
Are we okay? So thank you very much, Rocco and Alessandro.
Thank you too.
And I stop.
The different understanding of the police.